This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. Today, we are after the election. I know we are all happy that the election is over. It's a long, long election process, many different phases, a lot of ads, a lot of negative ads, a lot of different upheaval moments and everything else. So I'm sure that we're all taking a breath of fresh air after this election is over. But now, President Obama has been reelected. And the question is, what does that mean for the United States? But more importantly, on Fed Access, we're going to ask, what does that mean for the federal government? I have with me Charlie. I'm going to call you Charlie. But he's Charles S. Clark. He's a government exec reporter, his senior reporter at Government Executive. You can find him at govexec.com. He's written a number of different articles on President Obama's victory, and just had a recent article about federal managers and federal employees be some of the highest donors of the president's campaign. Charlie, you know, as we're looking at the president, and welcome to Fed Access first.
Yes, thanks. Good to be here.
As we're looking at the president and reelection, you know, and you wrote this recent article about, you know, them being of donors, it sounds as if the federal employees were scared that the president wasn't going to be reelected and what that meant for them.
Yeah, well, the last couple of years with the rise of the House Republicans' leadership in Congress has brought an intensified sort of Fed bashing, and as well as concrete, a whole array of concrete proposals to reduce pay and benefits. And then, of course, there was a pay freeze put in by the Obama administration. So they were. It was one of the clearer divides among the federal in recent years. The federal workforce had a pretty clear choice, and the fact that all of the employee unions came out in celebrating Obama's victory, you made that very clear yesterday.
Do you feel, and you know, we've heard about certain things, and you hear two different dynamics, especially D.C. and the Beltway, but, you know, some people were very concerned that if the president gets reelected on the defense side, that, you know, people were talking about defense cuts and all this other kind of stuff, and then you had the outside of defense side seemed to be worried about other agencies, you know, the more the Department of Education, the more the arts and the humanities types of education, you know, agencies or anything that didn't seem to be just crucial, you know, even maybe some of your international type agencies like USAID.
Did you
ever get that sense in talking to federal workers that there was a divide between defense and these other agencies?
Yeah, and contractors as well. A lot of our readers are contractors.
Mm-hmm.
And during this whole debate over the sequestration threat that still looms, a lot of the defense community and contracting industry were believe that the president should intervene and protect national security, you use his unilateral executive authority to prevent these threatened across-the-board cuts from going through in defense. But the counter argument to that was that sequestration was always designed to be a sort of a threat and a sword of Damocles that would force action on the major budget issues on spending and taxes. So, you know, now that we'll see, of course, in the next 6 weeks how that all works out. I think on the domestic side, it was just a clear contrast with the Romney agenda, because many of the Republican presidential candidates had volunteered that they would eliminate specific agencies. Governor Rick Perry, for example, when Senator Ted Cruz, who just won election from Texas, Senator-elect Cruz, has a list of three or four agencies that he wants to get rid of or reduce. EPA he would reduce, he would get rid of IRS. So Romney was only willing to mention things like public broadcasting and National Endowment for the Arts, but he probably had bigger plans having to do with maybe housing or urban development or education or energy.
Right.
And so the contrast between him and Obama was pretty clear to many of the federal employees.
Is this the case in terms of, you know, as we're looking at President Obama's agenda and kind of, you know, as we're looking towards the next 4 years, you know, what do you think the playbook is for federal agencies? Are we going to see any kind of cuts in agencies? Or are we going to kind of maintain the consistency of what we're seeing now? Or do we plan to maybe see some increases in some agencies? I mean, what's your take on it?
Well, I think that overall, the idea that government can play a positive role in the lives of citizenry is sort of the central message of Obama's campaign and his victory, and that was dramatized, of course, by the Hurricane Sandy and how everybody saw how well FEMA performed, for example, and it became a little bit of a symbol of that. But on the other hand, there is a huge budget deficit, and under Obama's first term, agencies were asked to cut spending by about 5%. During each of the last 2 years, the coming budget for fiscal 2014 is supposed to have 5% cuts. So there's a lot of streamlining that the Obama people have been trying to do, and that will continue, and it will be more sort of systematic and thoughtful. Obama's election also gave him somewhat of a mandate to raise revenues, taxes on the wealthy. He was pretty clear about that during the campaign. And the polls show that most Americans, even wealthy people, think it's necessary. And so that will alleviate the need to do some of the more drastic cutting. But I still believe that most federal agents, employees should expect more austerity. And, for example, traveling to conferences, which, as your listeners all know, became a big issue.
The GSA,
year.
Yeah, sure.
That directive to reduce travel and spend more wisely on conferences will continue in effect. And so I don't think the government will be hiring promiscuously, so to speak. However, there's one exception to that, is it'll be the cover story in Government Executive next month, is on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which was another victor in the a winner from the election, because had Mitt Romney won, there would have been an effort to repeal the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial reform law, and that might have spelled the end.
And that was Elizabeth Warren's baby, too.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite ironic that she just got elected to the Senate.
Well, I guess we at least ensured that agency is going to be around at least for another 4 years.
Exactly.
You know, with that being the case and the kind of the priorities, and you mentioned about maybe, and so what I'm hearing from you and what your kind of take is from talking to different people is that it's not necessarily a matter of maybe just major. I mean, of course, we've got to deal with the budget issues and everything else, but it's not necessarily a major cuts in agency personnel, so to say, outside of kind of just, you know, standard issue retirements or things like that, but definitely cost cutting measures as it relates to any kind of, like you said, travel or anything else that just seems to be is not non-essential type emergency type stuff. They're going to be taking a big look at that. And also, would that also mean that technology is going to take even a more of a forefront, you know, whether it be cloud computing, teleworking, everything else, where more investment is going to be put in technology to avoid people from having to travel and do this stuff?
Yes, and they're talking about centralizing the authority with the CIOs in different agencies, and technology, as your listeners know, was very expensive over the last 20 years when the whole computer revolution happened, and it ended up costing more because of all the equipment and software and training that was required. But I think maybe the people are getting a handle on how to use it to actually save money, and telecommuting and less travel is one example. And the movement to close down the federal data centers and move information up to the cloud is obviously, once the equipment's in place, is a money saver too. That will continue. And see, it's interesting that when I interview academics on how the government should be organized, they always get back to the principle that the politicians should decide what the government ought to be doing, and then give them enough money and tools to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, instead, there's sort of unfocused and politicized debates about waste, fraud, and abuse that doesn't really achieve a consensus on should we have this program, should we have this agency? If so, then let's give it a decent-sized staff and then what they need to do their job.
Right. It's always it's a disconnected conversation sometimes.
Exactly.
We're going to take a quick break, Charlie. When we come back, I want to kind of keep on going down this path. I know you had an article about Obama's victory gives management reformers some breathing room. I want to talk about that and continue to talk about the next 4 years that we can anticipate. What are the next 4 years looking like with President Obama? We've got on the line with us Charlie S. Clark. He is a senior reporter at Government Executive Magazine. You can find him at govexec.com or governmentexecutive.com. He's written a number of different articles. He's got a new article out today about, this week, I should say, about federal employees giving to Obama's campaign, definitely trying to make sure that they did not suffer any cuts if Mitt Romney had won. We'll be right back after this break. But listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we have been talking about the victory of President Obama and what it means, not really just for the country, but really what does it mean for federal government? As we all know, federal government is the tool that the president used to, and we've seen this definitely with Hurricane Sandy, is a tool that the president has a chance to use, whether it be the military or the Department of Homeland Security or Department of Energy or anyone else, to be able to put these policies and put certain things into effect around the nation. But what is the impact of his reelection upon federal agencies and federal spending, and where is this going to go? We're talking to Charlie S. Clark. He is a senior reporter at Government Executive Magazine. You can find him at govexec.com or governmentexecutive.com. Charlie, you had this article about Obama's victory gives management reformers breathing room. What were you kind of talking about on this in terms of the whole management reform? You know, I mean, we've seen a number of different management reforms in government, but in here you were focusing on what?
Well, the White House has its campaign to cut government waste, which has been in effect just about over a year and a half. Vice President Biden was put in charge of it, and it has cabinet level reviews of progress for each agency to combine a lot of small things. Everything from selling off excess real estate to reducing the number of printers and pages printed from printers, and vehicle fleet management, and of course the reductions in travel and conferences. So and then you have under this 2010 Government Performance and Results Act, you had requirements in law that each agency set program goals and evaluate those goals using data. And there's also a requirement in that law that there be interagency priority goals, they're called, and that includes things like selling off real estate or boosting exports or creating more programs to train young Americans in the so-called STEM subjects, science, right, technology, and engineering, and math. And so those are just getting started. You know, they just released the 14 that the Obama people created last February. Now, if Romney had won, he may have had a different set of 14 priority goals. And so a couple other examples, the rise of data analytics, meaning using quantifiable measures to measure both whether a program is effective and whether the money was well spent, and also the individuals and their performance reviews, more data is being used. That's an example of something that they've been working on for years, and the second term will give Obama and the agency people a chance to bring that into clearer focus and evaluate.
You know, with that, and I kind of goes to what you're saying about this kind of reduction of just, you know, wasteful spending, which, you know, as we always get articles every year about some kind of wasteful spending. And, you know, we had the GSA this year. We've heard things at the VA. We've heard different things like that. With this and with these kind of mandates, have you seen them to be embraced, I should say, by agencies, or have you seen a pushback?
I do see a pushback, both among some employees. See, here's the tragedy of it. It was really a few bad apples at the Public Building Service of the General Services Administration mm-hmm. who planned a pretty extravagant training conference in Las Vegas. Now, as there are people have pointed out, there's nothing wrong with going to Las Vegas because they have very good deals on hotels there. So even though the optics can be bad,
it just doesn't play right.
Yeah, exactly. But the point is that there's 12,000 GSA employees, and they all resented very much that they were tarred with that bad publicity, and that spilled over into other agencies which resent them. But I also have interviewed some former OMB types and some academics who and some workforce development people who really stress that training is very important and networking is very important. Mm-hmm. If you want to continue to attract white-collar professionals to federal service, it's in the white-collar executive jobs where the pay in government is often not as high as it is in the private sector. It's in the middle and lower-level positions where the pay and security in government is pretty attractive to a lot of people. So if you want to have dynamic and high-powered people working for federal agencies, then you may have to allow them to go to conferences and network with their colleagues. And this is certainly obviously true in the scientific and medical fields. And
you think that's where that mindset came from, that in order to compete in this environment with maybe a major corporation or so, where they may have an extravagant conference or so, that we need to do this? I mean, is that where this mindset was coming from?
Okay. Yeah, and that's also one of the tragedies of this whole GSA scandal, is that the idea of having team building exercises and performers, whether it's magicians and mind readers or whether it's just people who lead the crowd in drills with props, using big drumsticks, which is what happened at another GSA awards conference held in Arlington, Virginia, is that in the private sector, this is very common. In the private sector, they have golf outings.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just people in government have to get used to the idea. And I quoted acting GSA Administrator Dan Tankerlini as saying that all they've done, they haven't banned conferences. They're just saying that they have to fulfill a more strictly defined business purpose, and the atmosphere at the conferences have to be business-like.
Mm-hmm.
There should be no more spectacles that can be videoed and then mocked by especially people on Capitol Hill who control the purse
right,
ring.
Right. So what they're saying is what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. You got to be a little bit more careful these times. That's what it sounds like, Charlie. As in looking at the next 4 years and kind of mapping this thing out, and I know in one of your articles, you kind of talked about a number of different things, about the federal workforce, shrinking budgets, but I want to focus on the federal workforce. With that, do you think that there will be a number of people over the next 4 years? Will there be a major transition of senior executives?
Yes.
And political appointees? Are we going to be seeing a major change of leadership over the next 4 years?
Yes. Well, first of all, there is a retirement wave coming. It's been well documented.
Okay.
It was predicted, of course, because it's based in part on the baby boomers aging.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have some issues of morale in this day and age with the big deficits and the political criticisms of the federal workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Some people may have just gotten demoralized and left. And you have the retirement wave will hit at all levels. And then the senior executive service is even higher. That's something like 58% of them are scheduled to retire.
Wow.
And they can, a lot of them who are only 58 or 60 years old can easily get private sector executive jobs, and that's attractive to them.
As the economy may be pushing up, we may see more and more people, especially at that point where you can retire. You've been in the government 20, 30 years. You've got a GS-15 or SES position. Then they may, they may be looking for the next, and looking for more money. And looking for the next phase of life.
Well, see, with the economy improving, the second term gives Obama a chance in the second term to operate, perhaps. I mean, the economy hadn't improved yet, but
mm-hmm.
it is improving in an atmosphere of where people have more prosperity in mind rather than austerity.
Mm-hmm.
But that the downside of that is that it might lure a lot of qualified feds who have a lot of institutional knowledge that takes years of training. It might lure more of them into the private sector. And then, of course, the fiscal cliff negotiations that are starting next week and will go on through Christmas, one of the big issues is whether the federal pay freeze is extended. And as your listeners know, it's been in effect for 2 years, but President Obama a year ago proposed a 0.5% pay hike.
Right.
And that's one of the bones of contention in the negotiations. It's interesting that of the employee unions that put out statements hailing Obama's election, I think it was the National Treasury Employees Union, said that over the that federal employees, because of the pay freeze and other issues, have really given the equivalent of about $75 billion over the next decade toward deficit reduction, and they sort of. That therefore, they're arguing that
their
contribution has been made,
right,
and they
right.
should be shielded, and that the pay freeze 2 years is long enough.
Right. So. And, you know, when I come back, we got to take a quick break. When I come back, you know, with this dynamic, and we're also talking about some possible major shifts in leadership. I mean, you know, Treasury may lose their head, and Hillary Clinton may step down.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, hear what you're hearing about that, and where does that shift? You know, Obama, I mean, he's had a pretty, you know, a team that was working pretty diligently to do some things. Does that shift how things are going to be done? We're talking to Charlie S. Clark. He's a senior reporter at Government Executive. You can find him at governmentexecutive.com or govexec.com. We're talking about the next 4 years with President-elect Obama. And what does it mean for federal government? What does it mean for these federal agencies? What does it mean for the priorities of the nation? We'll be right back. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're having an interesting discussion on President Obama being reelected and what does that mean for federal government? What does it mean for federal agencies? And what does it mean in terms of the priorities that's going to be placed for federal agencies over the next couple years with any kind of change of leadership, dynamics being faced in terms of having to cut budgets and everything else? We're talking to Charlie S. Clark. He's a senior reporter who's been covering these issues at Government Executive Magazine. You can find them at govexec.com. Charlie, when with the federal workforce continuing on with that, you know, a possible major retirement wave, possibly up to 58% of the SES people could possibly leave. You know, even if 25% of that leaves, I mean, you're losing a mind trust of people who've been around for quite some time and know how to run agencies. Two questions. You're talking about possible major cabinet posts change. And we, you know, a lot of times in administrations change, you see cabinet posts change. Are you hearing anything about that? Are those more rumors? Or are we talking about some facts?
There'll be some facts. First of all, it's exhausting being in the cabinet, and especially you'll recall that they came in and had to hit the ground running in the middle of a financial crisis.
And Hillary Clinton I don't think she's been in the United States.
Well, exactly. And that's why I was always a little bit skeptical when people already talked about whether she's going to run for president in 2016. Mm-hmm. I mean, possibly, but I think she really wants a rest.
Just tired,
And but here's one issue with that is that frequently mentioned as a successor to Hillary Clinton would be current Foreign Relations Committee Chairman John Kerry.
Yeah, I heard about that. Mm-hmm.
And one thing they would have to consider is that that would create an open Senate seat in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott Brown, fresh from his defeat by Elizabeth Warren on Tuesday, would be a very good candidate to run for that open seat.
Right.
And you might find him right back in the Senate. So they would have to consider that. Timothy Geithner, I think, has at least made it unofficially clear that he wasn't going to hang around for another term.
Mm-hmm.
Because he again, I chalked that up to exhaustion, and also he probably is due for a private sector job. I mean, he has been working with financial people most of his career, but it was, you know, mostly it was the New York Fed and then the government, and so he's a likely candidate. The other, you know, Ray LaHood is the one Republican in the cabinet, and he may feel like it's time to return to his political something more along his political roots.
Do you think that you know, because we saw some changes earlier in the intel community with Panetta leaving and then Petraeus going over there, and then Panetta now at Department of Defense. Do we think we're going to remain steady in that area for right now?
Well, I don't have inside information for the Pentagon, but I have, from what I understand, that Panetta is a little exhausted too, and that he came over from CIA with a promise to Obama that he would help set up the drawdown in defense, and because he has credibility both as a defense person and as a budget person, having been chairman of the House Budget Committee. And if they can get through sequestration threat and the fiscal cliff, then it's quite possible that Panetta would see this as a chance for him to retire. He likes to spend a lot of time in his California family ranch too, and maybe he's tired. I can't speak for him, but and there have been mentioned that the current Deputy Defense Secretary Ashton Carter, who is a PhD with a lot of I think he's a physicist, but also with a budget background too, that he would be a ready successor.
So we may see some major changes over the next. And I'm assuming, what do you think? I mean, just based on historical precedent, if we do see these changes, they're probably going to all happen in 2013. I mean, I would assume.
Yes, and but this is typical in a second term. And you know, a lot of governing is done at the second and third levels. My publication I've worked for before, the National Journal, used to call it the gray people, meaning they're not household names, but they really are highly skilled in getting a lot of the jobs done.
That's your senior executives who get the stuff done, and who are not political appointees who are there for, you know, a couple years. And there's always been the conversations are always a concern between the political appointee and sometimes the senior executives. Sometimes they get along, sometimes they don't. And that can send agency into either a very, very positive spin or a negative one.
Yeah, well, you know, there's also, it's good to have somebody from the other political party in the cabinet in this era of divided government. And I just noticed that, you know, Senator Jeff Bingaman of New Mexico has retired this year, didn't seek re-election. And somebody has mentioned him as a candidate for, say, energy secretary. You know, there's a lot of Capitol Hill veterans who know how to work the budget issues.
That may be a good move for energy, especially energy is such a Republican hot button issue anyway.
Yes.
And so that it may be a wise move to put somebody like that in there. You know, should defense contractors be concerned? I mean, you know, everybody's talking about defense contractors being concerned. I know we got the shrinking budget. I know different things. I know we're trying to raise money, do some new taxes. But is that an adequate concern?
Yes, but see, what they want is stability so they can plan. Because they can expand and contract their workforces. A lot of them are laying off now, but I just think a lot of this alarmism about sequestration was an unsuccessful effort to get a resolution before the election.
Okay.
But that probably wasn't in the cards because everybody's waiting to see who won. But the contractors I've interviewed and heard speak are saying that they have been planning for a drawdown for a year or two now, and they've been systematically and shrinking their workforces rather than doing it suddenly. And they know that the agencies are going to have less money to spend and that they're going to have to rely more on contracts that are, you know, the lowest price minimum quality and fixed price contracts, because they just can't afford to have it open-ended and like they used to.
I guess this may be a time where they will start reprioritizing towards more cyber. You know, more of the hot button issues. I mean, not everybody can swing towards that direction, but you know, I mean, I would assume that some of the contractors are already starting to look at where is the money going, and let's start moving in that direction.
Yes, I mean, for example, some of them have defense pasts and are moving into health and human services.
So they're starting to cross it out where they used to just be pure defense. Now they're looking into other areas. I mean, you know, the VA is one of those areas that's going to continue to grow, it seems, just in terms of the president's priorities in terms of veteran health care initiatives, and also just veteran hiring.
Well, also the baby boomers retiring, and also we've had two hot wars over the last 10 years. And so there's a lot of veterans who are going to, after they get jobs on returning home, they're going to need health care. And it's a decades-long proposition, in other words.
With a lot of the people have been concerned about military cutbacks, I'm assuming, you know, given the nature of this thing, we can still, adequately predict that there is going to still be this kind of right sizing of the military as we move back from Afghanistan and other places, the Marine Corps, Army, and Air Force and Navy. There will be a shrinkage, so to say, of these forces. Is that still in the books?
Yeah. Yes, I think that the strategic roadmap that the Pentagon produced late January, I guess it was. People are probably going to give that more time to work now that the election is over. And so you remember that Governor Romney's proposal was to boost the Navy, build another 40 ships or something. And he would have undone a lot of that had he been elected. And I also saw an interesting observation about President Obama won a surprising number of votes in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia, where there's all that shipbuilding in the Norfolk area. And the deduction that some of the analysts were making is that the average voters down there understand that the defense of the nation is not necessarily going to be a jobs program. That they know that there's a budget deficit and that defense has to make a contribution toward it. And so that... this came up in the debates that Obama was arguing that he worked with his joint chiefs and the strategic planners to come up with a systematic way of having some kind of peace dividend from after a decade of war, but that there was still a strategic plan for making an agile military then pivots to Asia and is able to continue taking on the non-state actors such as the terrorist groups and Al-Qaeda. So they don't consider it to be as dovish and as poorly thought through as some of their critics would say. And a lot of the contracting community are savvy about this.
Right. So they kind of know what's going on. You know, we got to take a quick break. One thing I want to talk about as we kind of come to the end of the show is you had a piece in your article about the next 4 years about performance measures. And that's always been a hot button issue with government employees about, performance. You know, we had during the Bush years trying to change over and kind of almost a pay for performance type scenarios and everything else. I want to kind of talk about that because, are we going to see anything new as it relates to looking at government workers' performance as we're going over the next 4 years? We're talking to Charlie S. Clark. He is the senior reporter at Government Executive Magazine. He's been covering about what's going on with President Obama and covering about the different issues that relates to the next 4 years. What will be the different priorities? What are federal agencies going to be looking at with President Obama being in office over the next 4 years? We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been having a good conversation about what is going to happen with the president being reelected and with federal agencies. You know, we got a new 4 years coming aboard. The president doesn't have to worry about reelection, so he can have a little bit more of a mandate to do certain things. But how is this going to impact federal agencies with his priorities, with his list of priorities and everything else? We're talking to Charlie S. Clark. He is a government executive, senior reporter, who's been covering the issues that relate to the president and the federal workforce and everyone else and federal agencies. Charlie, in your article that you were talking about the next 4 years in the magazine, you had a trend there talking about performance measures and talking about the dynamics of looking at and this has been ever since I've been looking at government. This has always been a hot button issues about performance issues and government employees. Some people being blamed to be lazy bureaucrats or lazy government workers. You always hear that. And, from my take, when I talk to government workers all the time and you do, too, I know there are a number of government workers who push it to the maximum every day, who are, on call all the time, who are working late, who are doing all kind of amazing things for the federal government. I think that the lazy bureaucrat thing is a little bit overplayed, but, in any workforce, you're going to have that, some workers who don't pull their weight.
Yeah.
But what are we looking at?
Well, The bad news is that bonuses are under suspicion these days, and that's one of the other pieces of fallout from the General Services Administration scandal, that there was the people who planned, a couple of them who planned or else tolerated the planning of that wasteful Vegas conference, also got big performance bonuses. And that's one of the reasons that Martha Johnson had to resign as administrator of GSA, even though she wasn't personally involved in that stuff, is that she did not block that sort of bonus giving. And so the current GSA acting administrator has suspended all bonuses. And there was also some documentation by some of these private advocacy groups looking for waste, showing that the bonuses were out of hand and not related. I think it's a lot like the whole issue of how to evaluate teachers, which is politicized in our society, and that they're trying to come up with better data, and they're trying to have more systematic, regular processes that prevent sort of what people would say call corruption, of just having lazy, unproductive people hanging on for years because of who they know or whatever. But they still haven't really arrived at a quantifiable, foolproof method that tops evaluations by observation, meaning in the school situation, a classroom observation by the principal is still, among teachers, considered the fairest and most thorough way to evaluate. And so same with in the federal workforce. I mean, the direct supervisor, in theory, is supposed to have the best knowledge and is responsible for keeping the dead wood out. And but, you know, there are ways to make the performance reviews more systematic and more regular and more frank, you know, with checklists and opportunities for mutual communication. And there's also federal employees are being coached more on how to provide good customer service, and this shows up in these disasters. I mean, obviously there were a few complaints about FEMA during the performance in New Jersey and New York, but most people were very impressed with it. And I noticed it got sort of political. Some of the more conservative websites were drumming up, and Rudy Giuliani, for example, the election, you know, he's a Republican former presidential candidate, and he was trying to argued that the FEMA response to Hurricane Sandy was just as bad as the Katrina. One in Katrina, and I don't think that's a consensus view, but the point is that federal employees have changed, maybe it's over the last decade, you could guess, but there's more effort to provide customer service so that you don't feel like you say, well, you keep people waiting on hold and you keep them waiting in line. There's more awareness now that that's going to generate bad vibes and bad image.
So people the citizenship feels as if they're getting what they paid for. And I think that's the key thing right there. And you know what, you've been probably covering this for a while, but what is the pushback about the performance? I mean, what is the pushback about? Is it just the nature of that people are concerned that it will be used as a tool to get rid of a whole bunch of people? They're afraid it's going to turn into a corporate environment. And I mean, what is that pushback?
Well, it's possible that. You know, some people go into government because they consider it to be a stable place where they're they don't have to innovate and they don't have to sell things at a certain profit level in order to keep the company in business.
Right.
Which is so it's possible that some of the people in government are just never going to accept this idea that it should be easy to fire people. But I don't know. It just seems to me that. With technology and transparency, that's another initiative the Obama administration and the Bush one, the George W. Bush administration had some of it too, is today's consumers of government services are less willing to defer to government because they get the documents off the website and they see how this is supposed to work. And so that when they get somebody on the phone who they don't feel is serving them well or understands it well, you know, they'll point to some document they found on the website. So it's tougher to hide these days in government if you're not competent.
If you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. So, I mean, is what you're going to see is that are we going to continue to see a press forward of performance, of kind of management performance and performance of and evaluating performance of federal workers as over the next few years, over the next 4 years?
Yeah, I don't think it'll go away, but I think as the economy improves and there's more private sector jobs available, then there'll be less resentment of government employees.
Okay.
The stereotype that they have it easy and can never be fired will dissipate if the unemployment rate comes down. At least that's my sort of simplified
view. Well, then we'll be going back to the other conversation of that the government's having a hard time finding the best and the brightest.
That's right.
You know how we have the swings of the conversations, I mean, of the two different things. Is it a situation in terms of, you know, you mentioned about the political polarization. We've got a minute left. Do you think with this second term in terms of now, and I know it's hard to tell, of course, we can't completely predict it, but do you really think that there will be less political polarization, that there will be kind of a come to Jesus moment that people, you know, say, hey, listen, and no offense on any religion, but, you know, a consensus that we need to get working?
Yeah. What I've noticed when I cover hearings on the Hill is that a lot of it is theatrics for voters back home and to create a YouTube moment of a member of Congress standing up and decrying waste and fraud. But at a lot of the lesser known hearings dealing with such obscure things as the strategic sourcing initiative of the General Services Administration, you know, bulk contracts, bulk purchasing of office supplies, mm-hmm. for example, which small businesses ought to get those contracts, that's not a hearing that's going to attract a whole lot of attention. And when at that kind of hearing, you see that a lot of members of Congress who are very reasonable and knowledgeable and sincere and want to know the details and work with the agency people to make very minor and unsung improvements, rather than just shouting about how billions is being wasted in such obvious ways, which there isn't a lot of obvious waste. There is some.
Right.
But the obvious waste has probably already been pointed out.
Right. So. But there's that minor waste that's not being tracked right now, that hasn't been audited yet. And I mean, we know it's definitely going on. And you know, we do hope that federal workers are, you know, paying attention to the taxpayers' dollars. And we know that some aren't. But we would say that, you know, the majority are trying to do the right thing.
Yes.
You know, Charlie, thanks so much for covering this. We're going to definitely stay tuned with your articles. I definitely want to have you back as you know, time progresses, especially as we swing into the next year and kind of see how the president is doing, how the government is doing, you know, what challenges are we facing? Has there been any kind of improvements as we go into 2013? So we'll definitely hope to have you back on the show.
All right, Derek, I enjoyed it. Thank you.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.